The truth of the matter is that Jesus would not be welcome in most Episcopal churches, period, because Jesus had radical ideas. And what we have done is we've turned Jesus, the raging bull, into a milk cow. And we have done this for organizational sustainability and survival. We have done this so as not to offend.
This is Four People with Bishop Rob Wright.
Welcome to Four People with Bishop Rob Wright. I'm Melissa Rao, your host. And friends, this is part two of celebrating our 100 episodes of Four People. Thanks for being with us. And we're especially grateful for a special guest, Winston Arthur, a priest in the Diocese of Atlanta. Welcome, Winston.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. And, I'm so grateful that I'm on the other side. I'm offering some comments or observations rather than being a listener. So I am a rector of wonderful church on one of the largest rocks in Georgia, Stone Mountain. So my church is St. Michael's and All Angels. And I've been there for the last 5 years, enjoying it and enjoying loving the people.
Love that. And welcome Easton, our producer. How's it going, dude?
Hey fam, it's good. It's like I said in the last episode, it's funny to be on the other side of this, but I'm looking forward to chopping up some stuff from Bishop today.
Yeah. So friends, just like we did our last episode, if you didn't hear it was kind of like the greatest moments, if you will. And, you know, we've got so many of them, so it was hard to pick and choose. But what we did, we played a few sound bites and then we unpacked them. And we're going to do that this week, only we're listening to Bishop's words and we're going to unpack them about the impressions that we've had listening to them. And so, Easton, how about you cue us up with our first?
Mary embodies girl power. Mary says that I have agency. I use my voice. I say yes. I say yes to God. And not only that, I also have a statement to make. And that's what the Magnificat is. This is my statement. This is who God is. And this is the way that the world should look. And it starts inside of me.
It starts inside of me. So I feel like that was a complicated stuff. Like that was a lot right there. He's talking about girl power. He's talking about agency. He's talking about standing up for what people believe in and following through. And so, Winston, what do you think about that overall thing? Like, how does that sit with you, knowing that you're a leader of a congregation? What is your wish for them about how they use agency in what they do or how they live into their life as Christians?
Sure. Yeah. So if I could pivot a bit before we get to agency.
Always.
The comment or the observation that Mary had girl power is so accurate. And I want to speak to, you know, the realistic presence of girl power in our church, in our community. Obviously the focus is on Mary, but when we think about where women have been placed in the Bible and their roles within the Bible, girl power comes alive. Expanding upon that point, you know, obviously the story of Ruth and the relevance of her actions and her commitment to offering hospitality and being committed to following the advice of Naomi. She played a big, huge role, and now she's inserted historically in the genealogy of Jesus. Of course, Mary and the Magnificat, and then Mary Magdalene, and having her confession about understanding the resurrection of Christ and his powers in resurrecting Lazarus. And then what I mentioned too in my Easter sermon, talking about girl power and the importance of women in the Bible, about Mary being the first one to proclaim about the risen Christ. So girl power is a thing. Girl power in our churches, you know, is definitely a thing.
Can I interject though? Yeah. Because I feel like some people would have women in the church just be wallflowers.
Absolutely not. again, you know, the Bible, it's true. Well, the Bible cements the important role of women.
Easton, you're a daddy of a girl, right?
Absolutely.
And so how does that hit you as a father?
that's what I love about so much of what he does on these segments anyways, right? He's talking about leadership, right? And that we've all got it. And, it, you know, here in this story, what's fascinating is it's how Jesus comes into the world. And it's also the ones that first come to the disciples to proclaim the good news that he has risen, right? So that's wild on both ends. But it certainly makes me think of, with my own daughter, how I want to walk alongside, and that I know she can do anything she wants to in the world. And we don't talk about that enough. And so I appreciate that we've got a bishop that he talks about girl power all the time.
Yeah, I agree. All right, friends. Well, let's listen to our next clip.
And so right relationship is maintaining that understanding, but not only with God, right? Not only sort of in that vertical relationship, but horizontally. If God is God and you are also the creation and the beloved of God, then how I deal with you also has to change if I want to live out the humility I say I have vertically.
Y'all, this is when I hear that, when I think of vertical and horizontal, or horizontal, I think of that, you know, that old nursery, like that deep and wide, I don't know. Anyway, but it is, it's about being deep and wide and being in right relationship. So if we're in right relationship with God vertically, then it means we're going to be living out right relationship horizontally with the people around us and our neighbors. Do you think that was summarizing what Bishop was getting at?
It's really unique, because I'll tell you what it makes me think of, and we've talked about this too, is heavenly citizenship.
Totally.
We're citizens of heaven, you know, called to live out our walk with Jesus in the world for the world. And what he's really doing here is challenging us to do that, because it's hard.
Sure it is.
It's hard.
Absolutely, it's hard.
Yeah, and what Bishop Wright does extremely well in sharing the rumbling of the Holy Spirit within him is to create the imagery of a story. So not only are there words, but there's imagery that you could associate with it. Let me explain. So if we look at the vertical and the horizontal, it's clear, the Christology, the cross.
That's right.
I first heard this explanation, which is so accurate, from Charlie Holt in Reflections During Lent, and then spilled over to Easter, where he was talking about forgiveness. And the ultimate forgiveness, of course, comes vertically, and Jesus' wonderful work on the cross. And then our strength, our responsibility to wherever we have been wronged by others, to offer that forgiveness to our brothers and sisters horizontally. I've also heard instances where that has been referenced, that vertical horizontal action or model, by way of blessings around stewardship. We are constantly blessed from God. All that we have, all that we experience that brings us joy is from God. So wherever we can pass that along to our brothers and sisters by offering time, talent, or treasure, as is well known, that we do offer that horizontally. So the imagery and the model of a vertical and a horizontal relationship with God and others is critical in our faith in action.
What you got, Melissa?
It's so darn practical. And it's a really great illustration. You know, is it prophetic? I don't know about that. What I think Bishop Wright has a really great gift for is making difficult things
accessible.
Yes, you just finished my sentence. Yes, it's accessible. And so, you know, when I'm living life, I can put on new lenses and remember, because of what I've listened to or I've heard Bishop Rob say, I can process and implement a new understanding and a new way of being because of the way Bishop distills things for us. And so, you know, again, it's already been said, right? I just think Bishop has a real knack for words and a real way of explaining things that makes it accessible and applicable for folks. You got another one for us, Easton?
So what I want to ask people is that when have you seen it, right? I mean, we can get into these sort of six syllable word kind of conversations, but the truth of the matter is that when last have you been overwhelmed by God's majorness and how did it change you? And the point I make is that, yeah, I see it at the mountains. And yeah, I see it at the shores. And yeah, I see it on my morning walks in nature. But I also see it when I see people endure.
I'm going to just speak to a story.
Come on.
I had the privilege of volunteering to record a massive, diverse choir of young people this past weekend at Ebenezer Baptist Church, the historic Ebenezer Baptist Church. It was a God-inspired moment of seeing just praise. Just praise for God, people trying to do the work of expanding God's kingdom and reach on earth. And it was in that moment that I saw something that told me, we've got to tap into this energy source in the Episcopal Church. We've got something unique I think we could offer with music because of the way we do music. So like, how do we tap into that in a way that's more accessible for people that need healing? Because we've got something unique to say in the Episcopal Church that I think is loving all people and really striving to love and respect the dignity of every human being. I saw music as a bridge and catalyst to enter into hard conversations. And y'all, we can do it. So I was actually texting Bishop this morning, like, we really need to explore what it would look like to gather people to sing and record that and get it out in the world. I don't know what else is going to happen with that, y'all, but let me just say that it was one of those moments where I was like, I'm touched by God, by the Spirit right here, right now. Let's do something with the energy.
And yet, so when we have these kind of mountaintop experiences, when we experience things that are out of the ordinary and just lovely, sometimes it's easy to crack us open and we can experience God in a new major way. And you're a rector. So you, that's a fancy word for a senior pastor for our non-Episcopal listeners. And so you're tasked with creating or curating a space where people can worship and be moved and be recommitted. And I'm wondering, how much time or thought goes into that process in your role for helping people see God's majorness in their lives through worship?
You have, but let's say you have teed this up perfectly. No, seriously, I'll tell you why.
Yay, God.
Because I wasn't going to comment necessarily on the question that Bishop Wright asked, but the process of him leading people into discernment, which ties into your question. But I think what is unique about Bishop Wright is he asks good questions. So he may say, well, he did some training, you know, postgraduate training and asking questions. But it's really a gift to ask the right question to lead someone into deeper discernment. So anytime you leave Bishop Wright, you listen to his podcast and he asks a question, it's never a question that you can answer immediately. It calls for deep thought, reflection, and an awareness of where you are. So that is his gift. So to answer your question, how do we move past the usual liturgy, the usual process of Christian formation that is known in Episcopal Church, is by inviting individuals as led by Bishop Wright and asking good questions. And Jesus was a master at asking good questions. I mean, there's so many. Who do you say that I am? To the disciples, to the man at the well, do you want to be healed or do you want to be cured? I can go on and on and on, but the process of asking good questions is an invitation to a deeper discernment that you might not immediately experience in going through the usual ritualistic forms or structure of the Episcopal Church. So I just wanted to touch on how unique that is. And that isn't an art that you can acquire easily. It is something that's gifted by God. And I think that is his true gift, to ask the right questions and invite God into space in a way that you don't get anywhere else.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. I'm wondering about the practical thing is, you know, it's so funny. We spend so much time about teaching people how to answer questions and not enough time in seminary, you know, just on the art of asking good questions, right? Yeah. So it's a really great point. All right, Easton, any other thoughts you got for us, bro, or should we move to our next clip?
It's amazing that Thurman, you know, he realizes his limits in his ability to be able to see himself as he is, and he asks for divine guidance, wisdom, intervention, and being able to see himself. And I think that this is on the way to real reconciliation with other people, right? I think that if you want to keep other people at a certain amount of distance, if you want to maintain superiority and separateness, well, then don't accurately take your own measure, right? You know, default to putting yourself above other people, and then you'll keep the divisions going. But if you go down deep in who you are, in a real mature sense, right? So I'm neither saint or nor hopeless sinner. I'm actually both. And when we can get there together, now we have material, building material for real relationship. When I don't do that, I don't have all the tools necessary to do good building of community.
That was a big one, y'all. It was kind of deep. He's talking about community. He's talking about relationship. He's talking about authenticity. And I'm curious, how did that hit y'all?
Y'all, we've become, and I mean, I'm a millennial, and I remember what it was like to grow up and be in closer proximity, like to people that are actually around you, right? So when we think of proximity, you think of your neighbors and actually spending time with them. We don't do that anymore. I feel like in my neighborhood that I live in, these people that I'm actually in proximity close to, we don't spend time with. And so I think my question for Bishop Wright is, why have we become a society that spends zero time with the people that are in proximity to them? Why aren't we doing a neighborhood dinner or something?
You mentioned authentic, and you mentioned about Thurman. And so one of my favorite Thurman prayers is, it's called Open Unto Me. And if it's okay, I'd just really like to just share it with y'all right now. It's, open unto me light for my darkness. Open unto me courage for my fear. Open unto me hope for my despair. Open unto me peace for my turmoil. Open unto me joy for my sorrow. Open unto me strength for my weakness. Open unto me wisdom for my confusion. Open unto me forgiveness for my sins. Open unto me love for my hates. Open unto me thyself for myself. You know, the whole idea of open. And, you know, I don't know that this is the answer or why, but maybe we've just become closed off. We've forgotten to care about the simple things, and we've become insular, and we know it's wrong. You know, it just doesn't feel great. And I would see your why, and I would what's that called? Raise you a how. You know, how do we turn it around? How do we turn it around?
Yeah. When Bishop Wright references, you know, the importance of being authentic, it reminds me of a quote that Howard Thurman used that I try to speak to. And I think it answers your questions a bit, Easton, in terms of where is the interest or the joy or the appetite is that you can direct individuals to become more involved in their community or speak to or get engaged in difficult subjects. I remember Howard Thurman's version of this. Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go and do that thing. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive, something to that extent. And when we find what interests people, or what brings them joy. You can't be more authentic than that. It can be seen in the faces. It can be analyzed and observed in the energy. And of course, people are present. So if you're going to be authentic, we have to be real and honest and say, look, this area of ministry, reconciliation, social justice, Christian formation, outreach, whatever that is, or singing, brings me joy and I will come alive. Or gathering in a community and community building brings me joy and I will come alive. That's when you really see someone express their authentic self.
And that's my great worry. I have to say, I'm really thrilled that churches are really stepping into that, you know, the online, the digital, the virtual space, where, however you refer to it. I do worry about authentic connection. You know, I'm all for online worship as long as it can turn into authentic connection in your own milieu, your own context. You know, if that's what you need, great. And I just pray to God we're not doing that at the cost of connection.
Well, Melissa, so true, so true. And as you know, especially in this, I don't want to say post-COVID world, but as we learn to live with COVID, we absolutely have to meet people where they are. And so basically, people are interested in something. You know, the world hasn't ended. There is engagement in some activity. And to carry the message of the importance of the why to be involved or to be active or to be present or to speak is to meet them wherever they are, wherever that source of enjoyment is. So that's the how first is, you know, we spoke earlier about agency. Agency is action or intervention. And the intervention is getting up and saying, hey, I see you're present here. Let's talk about these fundamental issues.
Great. Well, Easton, do we have one more clip?
This is what I would say. The truth of the matter is that Jesus would not be welcome in most Episcopal churches, period. Because Jesus had radical ideas. And what we have done is we've turned Jesus, the raging bull, into a milk cow. And we have done this for organizational sustainability and survival. We have done this so as not to offend, right? And so I have to look at myself and others have to look at themselves. In what ways have I colluded with that, right? But I think that Jesus would not be welcome in most churches, right? We've made Jesus in our image. Jesus is not an English speaker. Jesus is not from America. Jesus is not an NRA member, right? Jesus is not from South Georgia, right? Jesus is a very small, swarthy, woolly-haired Jew whose daddy was a day laborer and whose birth was suspicious.
Talk about being real. You know, Bishop, he's got a way with words, right? Like he just gets right down to it. And gosh, how many people in our churches make Jesus out to be in their image? Right? Like if they're passionate about something, well then darn it, Jesus was too. And rather than being passionate about what Jesus was passionate about, we put Jesus into a box with preconceived notions about what we think. I don't know, you guys, it's hard for me. It's hard for me when people say, well, we can't talk about politics in church. Guess what? Bullshit. I'm just saying, I don't know that we can be a church if we're not talking politics. No, we don't. And you know, Bishop Wright's very clear. We don't talk politics. We don't talk partisanship. That's the whole kicker, right? We're not endorsing candidates. We're not doing that kind of thing. But Jesus was political. And so we have to be political. And I just wonder what you think about that whole raging bull versus the, you know, the little tiny, the milk cow. Oh my gosh, so funny. So I'm going to shut up now and I'm turning it over to y'all. What do you think?
You know, I remember observing in a forum, I'm not going to say where, but observing a forum where someone mentioned, you're a good preacher. Just don't talk about politics and you'll be fine. So I always laugh at that. So, you know, this is my observation that church for many people, and I can only speak within my context and my experience, sees church as a place like a safe haven. Yeah, where it's a place where they can be refreshed, renewed, made to feel loved, made to feel comfortable, exchange the peace with so much joy. So it's an escape from a cruel world. Harmony. Yeah, I mean, you can offer so many platitudes and descriptions. Absolutely. But really, the message of the gospel is one of triumphant love over hate, of life over death, yes, but is also inviting us to hold us to a standard of living and viewing our brothers and sisters, which can be quite hard and challenging in this world. So it is a difficult message, but a message that must be told. And it is a message that, depending on the lectionary, depending on their circumstance, might make parishioners uncomfortable, but is a difficult message, but a message that needs to be shared. So, you know, it's just a view of church or what church represents for many people. But what is more important, to make people feel comfortable 100% of the time or to proclaim the truth of the gospel?
Yeah, I think Will Willimon called it maladjusted, right? In his episode, you know, we should be going to church to be a bit maladjusted, to think, well, I've never thought about it that way, I think is what his quote was. And, you know, when we talk about the political things, oftentimes people I talk with, whether or not we're on the same side of the political spectrum or whatnot, we typically agree that a problem is a problem. We just often disagree with how we're going to fix it. Right. And so, like, let's bring up the topic of illegal immigration. You know, many people stop at the fact that people are crossing the borders illegally and they stop there. But because they're not curious or because they're not asking questions, the solution isn't very easy. So is the solution taking in and bringing in and meeting people where they are, or is the solution further upstream? Gosh, wouldn't it be amazing if people didn't feel scared that they had to leave their home in the first place? You know, why are people feeling the need to leave their home in the first place? Well, they're living in places that are deplorable. They don't feel safe. They've got drugs and violence, and that's why they're fleeing. And so what would it look like for the Christian community or all people to help them, to help everyone reimagine how we can help people feel safe? And I'm not saying that's the answer. That there's no answer there. It was just it's a question. But again, we're not curious enough. We're not asking the right questions.
You're right. And also with illegal immigration, I mean, you referenced some issues, socio-political, socio-economic issues in the place of origin. But what about the cost of legal immigration?
Yeah. Come on.
So, you know, you could go about, you could say, well, this is the pathway and, you know, you adopt the right pathway, but there's a financial burden and is also quite timely as well. It can take 3 to 5 years. You know, it can be longer for other individuals. So when you think about, yeah, issues in the place of origin where some immigrants started their journey, yes. But holistically as well, is not just say, well, you know, why are they coming to the United States for a better life? There's some human issues there and some experiences that might be jarring. Why not they don't go the legal route? Well, yeah, there is a path. It's expensive. It requires many times legal advice. And it's quite lengthy. And what do people do in the meantime in terms of sustaining themselves while they adopt the legal route? So you're right. It's a very complex issue. And can only be actively and accurately discussed if people are curious to ask the right questions.
Thank you for that. Well, friends, Easton, do you have any other thoughts? This has been a joy. I just have to tell you personally, walking alongside Bishop and having the privilege to be a conversation partner, and the last 2 years have been an absolute gift for me. And I know that there are many people who listen and share these with other people because, you know, something spoke to them. And so we're inviting you to continue listening with us. If you have any ideas or thoughts and you'd like to be in touch with us, Easton, what's the best way for people to be in touch with you or Bishop Rob or for people?
You know, continue to find us on social media, Bishop Rob Wright. Shoot us a message if you've got an idea, and you know, we'll be in touch with you pretty quickly.
Well, thank you. And thank you, Winston, for being with us. I was just thinking when you were, and I would say when you were preaching, because you had some fiery stuff yourself, my brother. I was like, dang, you know what? That Diocese of Atlanta's got some pretty fine clergy in it. So we're grateful for you. We're grateful for all of your gifts, and we're thankful that you listen.
Yeah. And I just want you, you know, I can't speak on behalf of all the listeners, but for myself, I express tremendous thanks and appreciation for Holston. For you, Melissa, this is you, Easton Holston, and producing. Melissa, you asking some wonderful questions and challenging and inviting Bishop Wright to go deeper. I usually listen to the podcast on my drives or my rides to or from work, and it often fills me up and fuels my spirit where I feel challenged or empty. So, you know, I'm sure the other listeners too are equally charged after listening to your exchange. So it has been a blessing. I hope it continues. So thank you very much.
Friends, thank you so much for listening to Four People. As always, we're grateful for you, and we're especially grateful for the gift that this is, this Four People is for the church. Thanks for listening, and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Bishop Rob Wright. Please subscribe, leave a review, and we'll be back with you next week.